This is Matt Davis, and you're listening to Finding Etheridge on Cultural Manifesto. Finding Etheridge explores the people and places connected to the Pulitzer Prize-nominated poet, Etheridge Knight. Etheridge Knight was born in Mississippi in 1931. He began writing in the 1960s while serving time at the Indiana State Prison. Or, as Etheridge wrote in his famous 1968 book, Poems from Prison, "I died in Korea from a shrapnel wound and narcotics resurrected me. I died in 1960 from a prison sentence and poetry brought me back to life." Etheridge Knight died in Indianapolis, Indiana in March 1991, but his legacy grows ever stronger with each passing year.
The idea of ancestry. I am all of them, they are all of me. I know their style, they know mine. I was beginning to forget who I was.
My guest this week is Michael L.L. Collins. Michael L.L. Collins is an Indianapolis native, veteran poet, writer, and literary critic. Michael received his B.A. in African American Studies and minor in English from Indiana State. He dedicated his life to the Black Arts Movement as a writer. Michael was a close friend and protege of Etheridge Knight. He was one of the last participants of the Free People's Workshop and has written several chapbooks of haiku inspired by Etheridge Knight. Michael, thanks for being here, man. It's an honor to have you as our first guest with Finding Etheridge. How you been?
Doing pretty good. It's an honor to be here.
Sweet. Yeah, no, I've been excited to talk with you about this for a long time, and I think that this is the perfect way to share not only your story, but, you know, just your perspective on Etheridge, his life, his work, his impact. So let's jump right into it. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background and also how you first met Etheridge Knight?
When I was at Indiana State University, one of the things people in the Black literature community know about Indiana State University is the home of Black American Literature Forum, which is the premier intellectual book that the English teachers read, and it's where a lot of them publish. We didn't do a lot of poetry, but I was a poetry consultant there. I probably the only poetry consultant that didn't have a damn book. Okay. But I was a student there, and I was available, and I was cheap, and I was available. Okay. So I did a lot of programming for literature, and we brought Etheridge in once. And so it's not – I tell people is – I didn't really start having a relationship with Etheridge till later in his life, but I knew who he was. I ran into him a couple of times. I knew Eunice's son. I'm friends with Charles. I think Charles is his nephew.
His nephew, and Eunice is his sister.
And Eunice, of course, is Etheridge's sister. Okay, and they told me they related to Etheridge, but I didn't want to talk to them about it. And I tell people, I'm not a church boy, but I'm almost a church boy. And when you grow up, there's certain people they tell you not to hang around with. Don't hang around with ex-cons. Don't hang around with drug addicts. Okay? And I said, I don't care how much I like Etheridge's poems. I like my mom and my dad, too. I got to honor my mom and my dad. I can't hang around with him. Okay? All right? Like I said, one of the first lessons I learned as a kid is be careful who you hang out with. They got to get you in trouble. And Dan Carpenter wrote an article one year, and it said that Etheridge is in the hospital at VA. And I guess I thought about the Martin Luther King line, you know, how do you want to be remembered, and what did you do in your life? Did you go visit the sick? You know, did you help feed the homeless? And I said, you know, Etheridge is at the VA hospital, okay? I don't care if he's an ex-con, okay? I'm going to disobey my parents. I said, how much harm can he do for me when he up at VA hospital, okay? He can't hurt me, okay? I'm a grown man now, okay? So I go up to VA, and that was great because when I went to visit, he was sleeping knocked out all the time. All I did was sit by his bedside. And after he got out, you know, and he got better, he was telling about the Free People's Workshop and I love those years, me and Etheridge hang out and just being friends and just going over his apartment, talking to him. And one of the things, too, is that everybody tells you not to meet your heroes, okay? One of the good things about Etheridge is Etheridge had such a bad reputation, you know, is anything he would have did at first, you would have been impressed by it, okay? After he did, I'm more of appreciative of it now because I guess I was too young to realize he got out of prison in 1968. Mm. This is the 1980s. He had never been back to prison again on a long bed. Okay? Now, I'm telling you what. You meet too many prisoners that lived that long one. Okay? And they stayed out of prison. Okay? Stayed off of drugs. Okay, and I'm not going to tell you he didn't have no relapses, okay, but he stayed off of drugs. One of the hardest things, too, is when we were friends is one time you relapsed, but I think he had just got that cancer diagnosis. You know, you don't like to see your friend go through that. But one of the things, too, is I know that he checked himself in. We didn't have to have an intervention for him. Okay, like you hear all the time, he knew, in his words, I know what he knew when he effed up. He known he had gone too far. Next, only thing we knew is I got a call since he's in rehab, and I'm dumb. I'm trying to call him, visit him. Okay, you can't visit nobody in rehab. Well, the first thing they tell him is the same thing they tell my parents told. Is all the mother friends you hung out with, you need to quit hang out with them anymore. I said, they got rehab kept and they didn't know who he was, who we were. But he came back and came back strong.
What kind of places did Etheridge like to hang out at?
We used to hang out with the Free Papers Workshop.
That was at the Chatterbox.
The Chatterbox. It was my favorite place to go.
Shouts out to the Chatterbox, by the way.
We hang out there. We used to do the art galleries up and down Mass Avenue. And this was early 80s, right when Mass Avenue was just starting to come around again, okay? Before it really got built up like it is now. But it was just starting to come around. It was real, hippy-dippy, okay? Artsy-fartsy, okay? But that, you know, that was a good place for them to live right on the avenue because all that stuff was in walking distance.
Is that where he lived at?
He lived right Triple Nickel.
So I want to switch gears a little bit, and so I wanted you to share your thoughts about Etheridge Knight's philosophy on poetry and writing as a whole. Like, what was his perspective on the craft from in your view?
The major thing Etheridge talked about was the oral nature of poetry. Etheridge talked about the connection and the synergy between the poet, the people, the poem. 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 And that's one of the things I liked about Etheridge once I met him. He is his poetry. The rhythms of how he talks, the rhythm of how he thinks, it was in his poetry. He wasn't nobody different than what you read about. One of the great things about Etheridge's workshop was, especially for me as a black person, was he wanted everybody to be themselves. A lot of times when I'm in workshops and I'm with a workshop and it's led by a workshop white person, they want everybody to be themselves, okay? But they want everybody to be homogenized. Okay, and I got to fight to be black. Okay, I didn't have to be fight to be black. This is late 80s, before the cultural diversity, before all this stuff came along. We had black people in there. We had Indians in there. We had male, female. Okay, we had Hispanics in that group. Okay, I didn't even know there was damn Hispanics in the city. Okay, how did he find a Hispanic poet? Okay, but Etheridge, like I said, is, and I'm nearly sure, okay, we had people from LGBT community in the group. because Etheridge wanted people to be open and true to your authentic self, okay? And can't nobody, he didn't let nobody else tell you, don't let nobody else tell you who you are, okay? And don't let nobody else redefine you. And even though you're black, you have an individual blackness as well. Okay, be true to that.
Can you talk about how Etheridge was unique as a poet? You know, like the way that he had a really distinct sense of voice early on, like from the beginning, and then he had a really creative use of the literary devices. Can you speak to that about him?
You know, the thing too is everybody's true to their individual self, but one of the things too is I like about the 60s. I love when somebody asks me who my favorite poet was, and they expect me to ask Etheridge. I said, the 60s, I told him I like the 60s era, okay? The 60s era is about collective, about people coming together and stuff like that. Is if I believe in that, all that, and then I name somebody so unique and I got one above the other, that defeats the damn purpose, am I right? All right? If I believe in the social equality and everything, but I got a favorite, okay, you know, I'm doing Animal Farm on y'all. Okay, all right. You asked me to create an Animal Farm. I ain't doing that. Okay, I love Etheridge. I like his work. Okay, but I'm not gonna put him above everybody else. I'm gonna tell you what he was doing was unique. Okay, everybody was doing the same thing, but he damn had a good voice, and he put his voice out there. Okay, I think one of the things too is if anything, not as a poet, but as a poetry leader, that's where he was unique at.
I wanted to ask you about Etheridge's approach to the craft itself, like the way he created his work. I mean, he brought so many different influences from, you know, just black culture in general that had never really made it to the page yet. Like, for example, toasting, shining. I mean, these are African-American traditions that go back as far as we've been doing culture. And the way he brought that to the craft is really unique.
Yeah, thank you for bringing that back around to me, because one thing very different than Etheridge, okay, is Etheridge, can I read a poem?
Absolutely.
Okay. Trust the Muse. I studied haiku in the Free People's Workshop with Etheridge Knight, who taught that haiku should not be controlled language. The elegance of the 575 form should be so subtle that it could easily be a mere dialogue, like one between the mentor, the muse, and the friend. Okay, that's a haiku. It goes seven. It follows the 575 form. It's a leaked haiku. Okay, but one of the things Etheridge told me one time is...
Thank you for sharing that, by the way.
Is Burt Bacharach died recently, and one of the things he said about songwriting is to use only words that only have a couple of syllables and no big, long, no elaborate words. I think Gwendolyn Brooks criticized Etheridge's early poems, okay, for using elaborate words. He says you don't need all that, okay? One of the things about Etheridge could spit his poems. Okay, and he could just drop them in conversation. Okay, and he could toast too. My friend James Depp, he said he knew him back in the street days. Okay, and he verified his reputation. He said Etheridge could toast on. Hey, Etheridge could stand out at the liquor store and toast with the best of them.
Shouts out to James Depp from Midtown Writers Association, by the way.
Yeah, James Depp founded Cafe Columba here in Indianapolis, okay? I'm thinking a lot of different stories about Etheridge. Etheridge, one time, there was somebody, a poet came up to him, was trying to brag. I guess he was trying to tell him how good his poetry was and his book and everything. And I guess he didn't know that Etheridge had a book, okay? And Etheridge says, my book's in the library. That's all he said. He said, your book's out. Hey, your book, you got to peddle it door to door and sell it to me. My book's in the library. Okay? All right? Where your book at? Okay? Then when he said my book's in the library, he was saying my book is everywhere. Oh, street dudes, old dudes like Etheridge cut you with a razor. When you cut, if you ever been cut with a razor, you got to check because you don't feel the cut. You don't feel the cut. When you walk away and you're bleeding, then you know. Then you know. Okay, somebody else got to tell you you've been cut. And Etheridge used to cut on people.
Etheridge is described as a blues poet sometimes. My interpretation of his work and the way I've received it, I think that that's really appropriate and spot on. What are your thoughts about his blues influence?
I think he dipped in the whole black tradition. Blues, jazz, toast. The whole oral tradition of that, which really goes into your last question, which I should have asked that. So that made it a great follow-up question. You damn doing good, Matt. Okay. But when I was with him, we started the jazz poetry session. I wish I would have did a blues session. Blues session, because he's got more of a blues feeling. But one of the things is he's been included in the jazz anthologies, but he mentions more jazz artists in his poetry. One of his first poems, I think, was about
Dinah Washington.
Thank you. Okay, I always mispronounce her name, so thank you. But anyway. You talk about the blues. Where's Etheridge born at?
Corinth, Mississippi.
What is Corinth, Mississippi? Okay, what is Mississippi? Do you think about jazz when you think about Mississippi? You think about the blues. And if you look on the map, that ain't far from Memphis. Okay, I bet you I'll shell up some dirt there. It'll sing the blues to me. Okay, it must be blues in there. Okay, it's just like a funny story people will tell you is like here in Indianapolis, half the preachers here from Indianapolis are from the South. Okay, the oral tradition. Okay, the oral tradition that we are comfortable listening to, is a Southern tradition. The Southern style of preaching, is the preaching that everybody's gotten real comfortable with.
You talked about how you were influenced by the 60s style. Obviously, Poems from Prison came out in 1968. So did Black Voices from Prison, which followed it. Can you talk about the Black Arts Movement? Like, what is the Black Arts Movement in your words?
Yeah.
And then what was Etheridge's role within it? And maybe speak about some of his contemporaries, too.
I think I want to mention I want to put Marya Evans in here because she came in through the same era. I think also, too, is now I'd rather the other poets speak for themselves, but the question I've asked them is, did Etheridge bring more of this authenticity to the Black Arts Movement?
Okay. Well, let's slow down just real quick.
Because he lived in the streets, okay? Because some of them still were, or a lot of them were tied to the academics.
And I don't want to cut you off, but can you talk first about what the Black Arts Movement is in your words?
In my words.
And then Etheridge's role in Marty and so forth.
I think during that time, it was before social media, you have to have people that speak for the community and speak to the community and have an immediacy. One of the things I was more aware of, the Black Lives Matter movement, I was aware of that long before then because I can remember poets like, let's say, Audre Lorde that came up, and she said, every city I go to, I hear a story about somebody black that died from the police. Okay, these are stories everywhere. Okay, every reading I do, because she had a poem she talked about. After that, somebody would tell her a story about somebody locally. Here, we talk about Herman. Okay, people know that, okay? People wouldn't know that nationally. I can remember back in the day when you talk to people, general people, I like to say general people, let's just say white folks, okay, about a black person getting beat. First thing they ask you, what did he do? Okay, what did he do? Okay, all right? Then they say, that's not what the police report says, okay? And then you try to convince them that the police report ain't the authority on this. No. I said, you know, we know what's going on in our community. Okay?
Why do you think poetry was the outlet for that era when it comes to black resistance and revolutionary thought?
Because poetry wasn't beholden to nobody. Okay? One of the reasons for that was poetry don't make no damn money. You can't, so they can't be bought out. Okay?
What about the way that audiences received it? What about the way that black people received the poets?
I think people were receptive. People wanted to hear from things, and that's what I'm saying is everybody wanted to hear from things, and you want, I don't know, is most black folks go to a black church. We don't just want to hear about God. We want to be entertained by God. Okay? All right? It's poetry is entertainment, and if poetry can say that. And also, too, is one of the things about poetry, too, is a thing of slogans, an era of slogans. And basically, a haiku is a slogan. How do you concisely say what's going on in the street in a few words? Poetry. You can't do it on a novel. Can't do it in a short story. You can do it in a poem.
Why did you dedicate your life and your work to the Black Arts Movement in the manner in which you have?
I was a fool. That was stupid, okay?
I mean, you make it look good, though.
No, I'm going to tell you right now, like I said, is you don't make no damn money in it. What the hell am I doing in this stuff for, okay?
Well, aside from that.
I was arrogant, too, okay? When I was young, I used to read books of poetry, and I'm thinking, I can write better than that, okay? And I'm thinking, I used to read these anthologies, and there'd be anthologies, and they do the youngest poets in there. I said, that's going to be me in there one time. They still ain't me yet, okay? But I've also quit writing poetry. And I haven't quit, but I've quit in some ways, and still do. But one of the things, too, is after he's died, you know, death of a close friend changes you.
Yeah.
And change your outlook totally. So I've got to think about, I can't even think about why I did that. Now, right now all I do is haiku. Okay? That's what my life lends itself to. That's why I say I quit writing. I don't write poetry anymore. All I do is write haiku. You know, after you got that poem, F Everything? That's why I wanted to, F Everything.
The name of that poem is Feeling F'd Up, by the way.
Feeling F'd Up. That's
from Belly Song.
I can't read it over the air because it's got too many F words in it.
Literally cannot read that over there.
I definitely cannot read that over there. Okay? But anyway, that's how I felt. I wanted to quit writing. And one of the reasons for that, too, is I didn't want to be a great writer anymore. After Etheridge, I said, look, I don't want to be a great writer. I've seen the type of sacrifices and things that made Etheridge great, and I figured, one of the things, too, is I figured, one is I'm not going to be greater than that, and I'm not going to pay the price he paid to be that great. I'm not going to prison. I'm not getting on drugs, and I'm not getting off of drugs, okay? That's the hard thing. Getting on drugs ain't hard. It's getting off the drugs. Okay.
Can you speak more directly about Mari Evans' influence on you?
I love her poem, Speak the Truth to the People. Speak the truth to the people. I tell you how much I like Mari. Mari didn't like one of my poems. And I consider that a badge of honor. I'm going to Black Expo. And Mari's going in, and we're going both going. This is what I liked about Mari. Is I used to see Mari all the time just walking down the street. And I'd be thinking, I'm an English major. I'm starstruck. Everybody is walking past her and stuff. I say, don't you know that Mari Evans? But she's also a person of the people. Okay? She's a person of the people. But the thing is, when she came into a Black Expo one time, she said, Michael, I don't like the poem. And she told me why she didn't like it. She said it's full of stereotypical images, and you can do better than that. What am I supposed to do, tell Mari she's wrong? And she was right. And I didn't see, I thought I was playing against the stereotype, and I was. I was playing it, I was using the stereotype as a joke. Okay, but she said is you got to be careful joking because other people don't realize that sometimes is the joke is on you. Okay, like the poem was Watermelon Man. Okay, it's one of the few poems I've got published. Okay, and once you got it published, it's out there. Okay, and I like it because it's it pays homage to Herbie Hancock. Okay, and to me, that's what it was more about. It was more about Herbie Hancock than Watermelon Man. But then again, too, it's a stereotype, and you got to be careful as a black person playing with stereotypes. One of the things I loved about Mari, okay, whenever I'd run into Mari, this is what she'd say. That's Michael. He's a poet. You know how people cut you with a knife? You know how people pat you on the back? They just give you a... That don't seem like much of a compliment, do it? That don't seem like much of a... But she knew my name. She knew I was a poet. She knows how important poetry is to me. Okay? For her to acknowledge that I'm a poet. Okay? I said, damn. The rest of my life, I sit there and say, Mari says I'm a poet. Okay, damn what anybody else says. Okay, Mari says I'm a poet.
Talk to me about the significance of the fact that both Mari Evans and Etheridge Knight died on the exact same day.
Oh, not only that, okay, I'll have to look it up again. Guess who else died on the same day? Harriet Tubman. Oh, the serendipity of that. Again, our death affects you differently. When Mari died, I can remember that Etheridge died early in the month. And I'm thinking, oh, they died around the same time.
And what day was that again, March?
The 10th, March 10th. I do a program every year honoring them. You ought to know because you've been involved in the last two of them. Okay? And I think more people should be aware of that, too. I can't think of why that's never been broadcast on the news. Okay? I've never read an article about that. Okay? Even when they mentioned both of them, that both of them died on the same day. The serendipity of it. Both of them poets in the same era. Both of them had workshops at the Indiana Women's Prison. Both of them are buried at Crown Hill. Both of them are buried next to their families.
The general perception of Etheridge's legacy, and I think it's moving away from this now, is that he's a prison poet and he's kind of been locked into that. But above and beyond that, obviously the scope and depth of his work is far beyond the prison walls.
I think I'm glad that's changing a little bit. I read a bio of him recently. I try to read all the bios of him, and towards the end, what Etheridge says, I know that I write prison poems, but I don't write prison poems. I write freedom poems. I write about freedom, and that's how that's how people are reading his work. Okay, and talk about the major themes in his work. He talks about human relationships. He talks about family more than he does prison. Okay? All right? And even overlapping. Okay? He's got a song from my father, Born of a Woman. Okay? All right?
Michael, can you share one thing that you feel isn't known or understood about Etheridge Knight, either that be something personally about him or his work?
I think I've said it all. You know, I just repeat what I've said already. I think one of the things me and you have had a conversation, and I changed my perceptions about it. Like anybody, I changed my perceptions about Etheridge. I try not to say it a lot, and I try not to emphasize it a lot. You know, sometimes I say Etheridge is a con man. But Etheridge Knight was very charismatic, okay? And that's a better way to put it, okay? I like to say he was a shapeshifter, okay? But he wasn't a shapeshifter in an American sense. He was a shapeshifter in a very African sense. And since I can't get to that, since I don't understand it, I can't make you understand it, make anybody else understand it, okay? But it's... that's one of the things too is when he I had to think about when he died. I had to reevaluate my relationship with Etheridge because everybody else was telling me how close they were to Etheridge, and I thought I was close. But one of the things too, one of the good things about Etheridge when he was alive, when people knew him, they felt they were close to him. Okay, they felt they knew him. That's because Etheridge let you know who he was. Personally, I like the brother. Okay.
Is there anything else you want to say about Etheridge as your friend?
I'll tell him in person. Okay. I visited, I'm stuttering now.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. I go to the cemetery every once in a while. I know where the gravesite is. And, I don't say a lot there. I let my soul do the speaking, okay? And I figure if there wasn't nothing, I say, hey, you know what they say, if you ain't bad enough to tell me in person, don't be sitting there talking about me how I'm on my back. I say, after he say, look, you was up in the graveside, you had nothing to say to me. Now somebody asks you how I feel about you, now you want to tell everybody, okay? All right. Is one of the things too, one of the perceptions I want to, I think, in respect to the Etheridge Knight family, okay, I want to tell you people is Etheridge, academics will try to sit there and try to lift up Etheridge by pushing him down, by telling you that when he was a kid, that he wasn't educated. Etheridge was smart, but also Etheridge was street smart. And he did a lot of reading, and his family wasn't literate, like college educated literate, but all his mother wrote songs, but he came from a background that respected the arts. Okay, but it wasn't the arts that you read about in school books; it was the arts in the church, and we didn't even call it art. Okay. It was just life. This is what you do. What Etheridge said, that's what art is. It's what you do. This is the craft we have. This is the oral tradition we pass down our knowledge, pass down our history. Okay. And that's what he had in his family already.
Michael L. L. Collins, thank you so much.
And Matt, just one T.
Yep. That's all I needed. Thank you so much for your insight, your wisdom, and just everything that you've shared about Etheridge as a friend, as a mentor, and as an example for everybody.
And I hope y'all listen, enjoy the show, and listen to Etheridge. And because, like I say, everything I say, Etheridge says better than I do.
Stay tuned to Cultural Manifesto for future editions of Finding Etheridge. And check out the Finding Etheridge podcast on Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you listen to podcasts. If you have stories, memories, or photos related to Etheridge Knight, contact us at findingetheridge@gmail.com. We might include you in an upcoming episode of Finding Etheridge or in the upcoming stage play documenting the life of Etheridge Knight. Finding Etheridge is produced by Kyle Long and hosted and co-produced by me, Matt Davis.